You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham in for Cynthia Canty. We continue to examine what the repeal of the Affordable Care Act could mean for Michigan. Today, the hospital's point of view. Laura Oppel is a Senior Vice President and Chief Innovation Officer at the Michigan Health and Hospital Association, the MHA. Stateside's Cynthia Canty recently spoke with her about Obamacare and the impact it's made in the state.
Good to have you with us, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
We hear so much and have heard the president-elect and leading Republicans talking about we're going to repeal and we're going to replace the Affordable Care Act. What does that actually mean? I think there's a lot of misconception floating around out there.
The repeal of the Affordable Care Act is happening as we speak, but it's kind of a two-part answer. To completely repeal the ACA as it was signed into law in 2010 would probably require 60 votes in the Senate, and there aren't 60 votes to do that. However, there are 51 votes to work at repealing a number of things that have to do with budgetary change. Things like the individual mandate could be repealed, or the employer mandate to require certain employers to provide coverage. The medical device tax could be repealed. The Cadillac tax on high-cost insurance plans could be repealed. Things that can't be repealed under what's called budget reconciliation, which only requires 51 votes in the Senate, are things like allowing people to stay on their parents' insurance up till age 26, or prohibiting insurers from rescinding someone's insurance coverage after they've made a claim. You also can't probably repeal the requirement that insurance policies have no lifetime benefit caps. So some things could be repealed using budget reconciliation and others can't.
As we go forward and we talk about repealing Obamacare, it's very clear that we're not sure exactly what that's going to look like right now.
We are not sure.
Dismantling it. Would that be good or bad for Michigan's hospitals?
We've always had a number of issues with some number of provisions in the Affordable Care Act. Dismantling, however, the coverage expansion that we were able to achieve for nearly a million people in Michigan, I think that that would have a huge impact on those people who gain their coverage, and by extension, it would have a huge impact on the hospitals that serve them.
How so?
People have been able to achieve coverage. You know, over 600,000 people are now covered by the Healthy Michigan Plan, which is the Michigan model for expanding Medicaid and requiring people to financially participate in the Medicaid expansion, as well as more than 300,000 people who now buy insurance through the individual marketplace. We're almost certain that the folks on Medicaid were previously uninsured. If they were unable to have that coverage and then need it for any type of health care, certainly a serious health care problem, but even modest health care issues, I think it can be a barrier to people seeking care, which lends itself to difficulties with your health, which in turn makes it hard to, you know, sustain your family. Having people come to the hospital without an insurance card and late in their illness is not the best outcome for anyone.
Because I've got to imagine that since we saw these nearly million Michiganders covered under the Affordable Care Act, have we seen fewer people using emergency rooms for primary health care since the ACA took hold?
We don't have that data yet. We do know that about the same percentage of people with commercial coverage use the emergency department as people with Medicaid coverage. So there doesn't seem to be a disparity between people who got expansion and people who use commercial coverage. What we do know is that the number of people who come to the hospital without some type of insurance card has decreased by 50%. We also see that the rate of uncompensated care, the burden on hospitals to provide care for free, has gone down dramatically as well. We still have a fairly substantial amount of uncompensated care, but the pressure on hospitals to figure out how to deliver all the services that communities need at the same time that they're trying to do it without being paid, that's lightened up a bit.
It's helped hospitals improve their financial health, if we will.
Improve their financial health, and by doing so, allowed them to keep delivering the services that people need in certain communities. I don't have any statistics, but anecdotally, we have not seen any more hospital labor and delivery services close in the last several years. We have actually seen some hospitals start adding some services, especially around urgent cares or, you know, other primary care services. I think that hospitals have some financial flexibility to come up with different ways to offer care that are more suited to the way that people need care today.
What kinds of hospitals have been most impacted by the ACA, for better or for worse? I'm wondering, you know, between rural or urban, large or small, what do you hear?
Every hospital has been impacted by the ACA. For example, in the Affordable Care Act, there was a provision that allowed for a program known as 340B. The title isn't specifically interesting, but the impact of it is that's a program that helps small and or struggling hospitals to pay for the prescription drugs that they need to use in their hospital. Many large urban hospitals use it as well. It kind of depends on your volume of Medicaid and your uncompensated care and all of those things. The ACA extended that to our critical access hospitals, and those are hospitals with 25 beds or fewer. Michigan has either 35 or 36 of that type of hospital. And being able to get better pricing on the prescription drugs that you use inside of a hospital makes a huge difference to hospitals who have relatively low volumes, but of course, you know, fixed costs that most hospitals have to deal with. At the same time, the more urban hospitals see the much higher levels of Medicaid and had very high volumes of people without insurance. And to be able to expand Medicaid in the individual market and have people come with coverage, not only because they had an insurance card, but also because we could get them into a system of organized care where they could have a medical home and start getting regular treatment for different types of problems that they might have through our Medicaid HMOs. It's not uniform what the impact was, but I can say uniformly everybody had an impact.
Laura, critics of the ACA point out there are some 25 million Americans who are not covered by it, and we saw premiums and copays and deductibles that many feel are way too high. And despite President Obama's initial promise, there are people who were not able to keep their doctor. From the perspective of the Michigan Health and Hospital Association, what problems does the MHA have, if any, with Obamacare?
If I could have fixed anything, I would have been the staffer that would have said to the president, don't tell people if you like your coverage, you can keep it. Because in so many instances, coverage decisions are not made by individuals, they're made by their employer, and people don't have that control over that. So that probably wasn't the finest hour of Obamacare. That said, well before the Affordable Care Act, we were moving into the world of high deductibles, copays, increased premiums for workers. That was going to happen, and probably, while it's difficult to prove the negative, I would guess that we could look back and do some research and maybe find that we kept premiums from going up more than they would have without the Affordable Care Act. But again, you know, I don't have the statistics to bear that out handy. Things that we would have probably fixed are there were some policies in there around payment and some, you know, new payment designs that came at hospitals very quickly, very fast, without a lot of testing and without a lot of evidence. We probably would have slowed some of that. We are very much in favor of innovation here at the MHA, but throwing up 100 ideas without waiting to see what is really effective, we would have probably changed that sooner rather than later. In terms of the number of people that were not covered under the ACA was never designed to get 100% coverage. There were always people that, you know, were going to be left out, including people who are not here legally, people who have religious reasons for not wanting to participate. While it was, you know, we'd all like to talk about universal access through universal coverage, that probably wasn't going to be possible. Hospitals overall committed to a contribution of $155 billion over the first 10 years through reductions in our Medicare reimbursement. We knew that that wouldn't get us all complete coverage, but we thought it was worth the investment to get the expansion that we did.
Is there anything that you have heard from Senator Mitch McConnell or other Republicans that gives you any encouragement of what a replacement plan might look like?
No, I've read Speaker Ryan's Better Way plan, and there's just not enough details there to understand what they might do in a way that would improve on the system that we have right now. I'm not saying that the system we have now is perfect. I'm saying we need improvements. And I am concerned about the level of financing for Medicaid going forward. I think there's a lot of interest in reducing the cost of Medicaid. We would say that there's a lot of costs that go into serving our population that aren't even recognized yet. So before you reduce the cost, I'd like to recognize the cost. What I would say is I'm hearing a lot out of the Senate and to some extent out of the House about people who are saying, you know, we can't just get rid of the individual mandate, eliminate the taxes and other things that support this, and then say, you know, don't worry, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, we'll figure out something else and you know, trust us. A lot of people are speaking up about the need for a replacement plan to happen sooner rather than later and to be well-defined before they finish the work on the budget reconciliation. And I think that's very encouraging.
If we think about, for example, Healthy Michigan, which, as you say, some 600,000 Michiganders, low-income people, qualify for health care. If that goes away without a replacement, what's it going to mean for people?
Oh, I hate to think about 600,000 people losing their coverage through Healthy Michigan Plan after we finally got it. I think that's heartbreaking. You know, those are mostly single adults, people that we didn't cover in Michigan. In Michigan, Medicaid used to be what one of our former Medicaid directors called a poor and program. Even if you were a parent, you couldn't be above, I think, about 40% of the poverty level and qualify for coverage. You had to be poor and a parent, poor and a disabled, poor and maybe a caretaker relative, maybe a grandmother who was taking care of your grandchildren or something. If you were married or single and didn't have any of those responsibilities or disabilities, there was really no way for you ever to qualify for Medicaid, regardless of your level of poverty or income, that we could finally, in our state, take care of people with at least, you know, a health care benefit despite those circumstances. I think that's a real credit, and it was a bipartisan effort. Our governor stepped up on that. We had a couple senators who were very active on that, then Senator Roger Kahn and Senator Mike Shirkey, who led the way, and, you know, many Democrats as well. It was a terrific accomplishment for our state. And for us to go back on that, for the people who are, you know, have the greatest need in our state and to lose that, I sure hope not.
Laura Oppel, who is Senior Vice President and Chief Innovation Officer at the Michigan Health and Hospital Association, the MHA. Laura, we want to thank you for being with us on Stateside.
I really appreciate having the chance to talk with you.